Today, I've got a little bit of a different episode for you. I'm sharing a personal milestone and the lessons that have come from it. Last month, I sold my digital agency, 352. I started the company 27 years ago while I was in college, actually started it out of a fraternity house. And it has been one constant in my life for the last 27 years as I grew up and raised a family and started different businesses. 352 was already there. Until last month, when I finally sold it after 27 years. It was an incredible ride with so much that I learned from it that I want to share with you today. And also, we are now reshaping Sports Card Investor based on some of the lessons and things that I learned from 352. And I'm going to explain that as we go as well. So today, I'm bringing Kelly Francis from our Sports Card Investor team back in the studio for what should be a fun conversation. Sit back and enjoy. Kelly, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
It's lovely to have you back again
yes,
today.
Yes, it's always nice to sit in this chair. I always feel like such a celebrity.
I like the energy from your outfit today.
Thanks.
It's good. It's brightening up the room, which I appreciate.
You know, when I was getting prepared for today, I was like, what will I wear? Because I know that you typically like your solid color shirts and I always tend to go with something a little crazy. But this is kind of like the pink from 352.
Yes, that's fair. And yes, and we should explain because we do have people that are listening on the podcast. By the way, the full-length episodes of The Jeff Wilson Show are available on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And by the way, a lot more people are listening to the podcast version every single week. The podcast numbers are pretty big on the show now. It's great to see people listening to it on the go. But for those who are listening to it via podcast, how would you describe what you're wearing?
I would describe it as a ruched pink shirt dress. It could be worn as a dress. It could be worn as just a shirt, but it's kind of out there. It's very bright.
You described it much better than I could. I don't know any of those terms. I love those terms. Shirt looks great. Shirt dress looks great.
But no, when we were, you know, getting prepared for today, I know of 352. Clearly, this has been a huge part of your life, and anybody that works for SCI knows of Cardi of 352. But this was one of the colors that was in the color scheme for that, and I thought it would be a good tie-in for the episode today.
It was a good time. Actually, an interesting little history tidbit, as you know, the audience probably doesn't know, but when Sports Card Investor started and then you were the first employee that I hired at Sports Card Investor, and we hired a few employees back in early 2000 and decided that I wanted to open up a studio, an office and studio, so we could all actually work together because at first we were remote from each other. And I intentionally opened up an office studio inside the same building where 352 had its offices on the floor above because my plan, which was all altered with the pandemic, but my plan was that I was going to be able to go back and forth between the two companies. And I would be at 352 running 352, and then I would sneak upstairs and go upstairs
to a small elevator ride up
to film some videos, to hang out with the Sports Card Investor team, and then go back down to 352. Never actually transpired that way because the pandemic ended up lasting much longer than what we had anticipated. So that entire time we were using the studio, we were using that studio for about a year for Sports Card Investor during kind of the height of the pandemic. 352 was entirely work from home. It was abandoned. No one was there because people weren't coming in because of the pandemic. So we actually kind of had a little bit of a run of both offices. We'd go steal the coffee from the 352
coffee
machine.
They had a great coffee maker.
We did.
Yes.
We had a great coffee maker.
Yes.
Great
coffee
maker.
Oh, gosh. I remember that distinctly. The snickerdoodles.
Yes.
Snickerdoodle coffee.
There you go.
Oh, so good.
There you go. So yeah, 352 obviously was a constant through the whole time that Sports Card Investor existed. And so I know everybody at Sports Card Investor kind of knows the 352 and has had exposure to 352 employees and the team and everything like that. And so obviously, pretty big change.
I mean, when you first started 352, did you expect it to go for 27 years?
No.
I mean, that's a child, Jeff.
That's a grown man at this point. It's a grown man. Yeah, it's more than a child. No. So I started, to give everyone a little bit of background, right? So I started 352 as a sophomore in college, and I It was the first semester of my sophomore year. This is 1997, and I had a little bit of an itch to do something entrepreneurial and to make a little bit of money for college. So
I love how this is like how you think of like, oh, I'm just going to make some money. Let me just start a company.
Most kids
are just like, I'll just go work at a fast food place or a restaurant.
But that's exactly what I did not want to do. Like, yes, most kids would go work for campus dining or the bowling alley or whatever. Back then you were getting like $8 an hour or something like that. But that's exactly what I didn't want to do. I was like, I can do my own thing. I don't need that. I can just do my own thing. And so my own thing was I knew how to build websites in a super simple way. By the way, back in 1997, it was really web pages. Mm-hmm. But I was super early adopter of the internet. I built my first web page back in 1994 this is pre most people having any idea even what the internet was. They weren't on it yet. Mm-hmm. It was super early, but I was into it when I was in high school. I like learned all about it and got on it and was like real early days internet, like 1993, 1994. And so I learned along the way, learned basic HTML. I could build basic websites. Websites were not complicated in 1997. And so I could piece one together on my own. And so basically I was like, you know what? There's probably businesses in Gainesville, Florida, where the University of Florida was, that want to get online for mm-hmm. the first time. Right. And I can build simple websites. And I came out of the gate charging $49 to build a web page for somebody. I mean, unbelievably. But you know, once again, like I could build a web page in a few hours.
Right.
So would I rather make, I could make $15 an hour by right. building somebody a web page versus like $8 an hour working at the pizza restaurant. So to me, that was awesome. So I
create your own hours. You're your own boss. I mean, that's the joy of an entrepreneur.
So I printed up some business cards. I went to like a local chamber of commerce thing. I put out some flyers. I put out a little website of my own. Went to like one little business conference and advertised that I could build websites for like $49. And I actually had a 1-800 number run into the fraternity house. I was living in the fraternity house, and I set up a business. The name of the business back then was Spider Web Page Creation.
Wow.
Get it?
Spider Web.
Web Page Creation. Wow. I mean, it was...
That's creative.
Wonderful branding. Unbelievably great branding.
I can just imagine the logo now.
Yeah. Oh, it was something. It was something. So I had a 1-800 number run into the fraternity house. And I actually told all the guys who lived on the floor of the fraternity house, hey, I'm starting this business. If this phone rings, it is the business. I put a little slip of paper. I said, please come answer it. And say,
oh, you allowed them to answer it. I would imagine you'd be like, please don't answer this phone.
So it worked really well for about 6 months because I like literally my clients thought that I had like 20 people working for me.
Oh, that's
because
smart.
Every time they called, somebody else would answer.
Wow.
And they would hear the phone ringing and they would go down the hallway. They were cool about it. They pick up the phone and they would read. I had a little greeting like, oh, thanks for calling Spider Web Page Creation. How may I help you? And then, you know, they'd basically just take a message from me and I call back. But like, it would be a different voice every time someone called.
That is
so
insane.
Yeah, I'd be off of class. The guys would answer. It worked
That's
out.
That's ingenious.
It was for about 6 months. Then one day, as typically would happen.
In the frat house,
the guys started getting a little rowdy. Beer bongs were being enjoyed in some sort of competitive format at like 10 in the morning.
No, at a frat house.
Oh, can you imagine?
Unreal.
Can you imagine? And that day, that afternoon, a couple of the guys thought it would be funny to start answering my business calls with very inappropriate call answering. So I heard from one of my clients who was like, hey, I don't know what's going on. I called your number yesterday and somebody picked up the phone and said something that was, it's like, I double checked the number. I wasn't intending on calling a sex toy store. However, it was bad. It was bad. I was like, okay, it's time to end the 1-800 number in the fraternity house.
Yep.
So I actually, at that point, and this would have been, I guess, early 1998, got my first little office. And I had two guys who I was partners with, good friends, Brian Keller and Jesse Merce, who were doing the business with me. We were all part-time. We were all students. This was just all a part-time thing. So we got a little tiny office. about a mile from campus.
Was it walking? You guys, obviously, you could walk there, or did you have to drive?
You could. It was a bit of a walk from the fraternity house. We drove.
Was it in an office building?
Yeah, it was in an office building. Yeah. Small little office building. Yeah. It was cheap. I mean, it was this rundown, dilapidated office building, which, by the way, when I actually sold 352 last month, I drove by.
Did you really?
All of the offices that 352 was in over the years, because we were in five different offices in Gainesville over the course of the 27 years. And so I drove by each of the five offices, and this one was now an abandoned building that was graffitied all over the side of it, like all chained up. It's still there. The building's still there. So the office is still inside. But it was an old kind of rundown office when we rented it back in 1998.
So really nothing has changed.
They clearly have done nothing to the building, right. And now it's graffitied and just abandoned. But it's still there. It's still there. That one's still there. So we rented an office in there, and then that kind of started it. And then 1999, the following year, I was going into my senior year, and then I had a big choice to make, because we actually had built up about 30 clients. That we were doing web pages for, and then
that's over 2 years. That's a lot of work.
And what started off with a lot of these clients being at like really, you know, building a single web page and less than $100. A lot of these clients were, you know, the web was growing. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden you had the .coms all rising up. This is when everyone was flooding on the internet in the late 90s. And so a lot of these clients were all of a sudden having all kinds of success with their web pages. Like they were getting a lot of business through them. So they wanted more and more, add more. Web pages became websites.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden websites started adding functionality. Mm-hmm. People wanted e-commerce, which was brand new, e-commerce. Like what, put in a credit card and something happens?
Yeah, it's so crazy to think about like how the progression of all of this is like within a 27 year span, like that everything's just completely changed.
And we were right at the beginning of it, and so it became too much to manage with a school schedule, because it was me and, as I said, the couple of guys, Brian and Jesse, that were doing it with me, and we were like all of a sudden working our tail, like it became very much full-time plus, and yet we were still full-time students keeping up with all the clients and everything. So we had a meeting in summer 1999, I said, hey, we either need to take this truly full time, and we either need to drop out of school or drop our classes way back, or we need to end this, because this is too much to try to do both. And so the two of them at that point decided to leave. The two of them were like,
oh wow,
we're school full time. They both had very different path they wanted to go on, and this wasn't their path, right? Yeah. It wasn't the thing for them. They weren't looking at this as a career.
Right.
They were looking at it as a way to just, you know, make a little money and have fun. I wasn't originally looking at it as a career, but all of a sudden I was starting to look at it as a career. I'm like, man, we built up a nice little business here over the course of a couple of years.
Be ashamed to just let it go.
Yeah, be ashamed to just let it go. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to lean into this and give this a shot. And I went back and talked to my parents. I'm like, look, I want to drop. I'm not going to drop out.
Right.
Because I knew they would not be cool with that. But I'm like, I'm going to drop down to 3 to 6 credit hours a semester.
Okay.
Instead of a full 12 to 15.
Right.
And I'll finish. It'll just take me one extra year and I'll finish. So basically, I basically took my senior year and stretched it over the course of 2 years.
Right. So, you went to 5 years instead of 4 years.
I went to 5 years instead of 4, just because basically my last 2 years I was kind of part-time. Mm-hmm. Just because so I could work on the business full-time. And at that point, we moved to another office. I started then actually hiring my first employees and started really taking it like real, as like a real thing. That was 1999. Then 25 years later, you know, through my life, obviously, from what it was back in 1999 as a senior in college to what it is today, I mean, it's obviously incredibly different. But 352 was the constant throughout.
Mm-hmm.
The constant. More so even than like my wife and my kids, because they didn't come till later. Yeah. So like 352 was the thing that was like the connective tissue between all of it.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
What would you consider, like, over the 27 years, what would you consider your greatest successes?
Oh man, there was.
I mean, had to have been so many.
There's so many different things, and I mean, what the business became was so much different than when we started. Like when we started, there was no grand vision, right? There was no vision that this thing was like, you know, going to become this big agency with.
Right. I mean, because you started it just to make extra money more than you would on a base job.
And by the way, there's an important business lesson there, because a lot of people like get stuck starting something because they feel like, I got to have my idea fully perfected, or I've got to like really have the full business plan, understand the full pathway, have all the details worked out.
Vision board. Yeah.
No, just start. Like, that's the thing, because even if you spend all the time doing that, mm-hmm. none of that actually ends up being exactly how you envision it to be. Like, once the business starts running, all of that's going to change anyway. It's like, you know, once you actually get into the game, then you all of a sudden you start to learn, oh, all the planning I did, you know, some things are working, some things aren't. We got to adjust. It's really what makes a business successful is really your ability to be agile and iterate as you go. It's not your ability to have the big grand idea to begin with. The right. people that are really good at business are the people that seize the opportunities that are in front of them as they present themselves and create opportunities and then seize them. But it's not the big visionary. And so, you know, yeah, what I thought this was going to be back in 1997, 1999 versus what it turned out to be, two different things. I didn't have the grand vision, you know, but I was really good at being agile and iterating and seizing opportunity. And so when you look at the 25 year plus progression of that business, like the big wins, the different successes, they always came from being opportunistic and wanting to try to push kind of to the next level, wanting yeah. to try to go up market, right? Mm-hmm. So like in the agency game, it's like getting the bigger client, getting the bigger account, right. getting the bigger name. The first real big company that we won work from, a big project from, was Microsoft.
Wow.
Back in, yeah, 2004 is when I think
that's when Microsoft is huge. Huge.
It was,
I mean,
a
not that they're
win.
Not now, but right. I mean, like, when you talk about like the golden years of Microsoft, that was it.
It was big. And so winning that project was huge for us. And then of course we went all in on that project to make it happen. Like, how do you break in with a company like that? You've got to show that company is going to be your absolute number one commitment in right. the entire world. And they had, and the story is they had a project. You know, Microsoft has all these big fancy agencies, right? Mm-hmm. That you know, so why do they need a small little risky startup agency? They don't need you, right? But occasionally the opportunity will come along. And in this case, they were a few weeks out from a major conference. They were, mm-hmm. There was a conference they did every year. I don't know, they may still do it every year, called Dev Days. And it was in Orlando. And I mean, this conference was being attended by over 40,000 people. It was
wow.
their big annual developer conference for developers who build on Microsoft technology.
Wow.
It was in Orlando in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And they, all of the you know, different tracks, all of the different classes and sessions, all that they do, all the stage presentations, they took all the materials, all the decks, all of that, and put them onto a DVD. And then the DVD was in everybody's welcome bag. 42,000 copies of this DVD, one in everybody's welcome bag. And then that was like your, all the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you got, that
the
was
material.
Part of your registration.
Right.
So they were like 3 weeks out from this conference, and whatever vendor, whatever big agency they had working on this DVD completely messed up.
Oh no.
Missed the boat, and then informed Microsoft that there was zero possibility that it would be done in time for the conference. And so Microsoft freaked out. So one of my friends, actually one of the guys who was involved, and we'll talk about relationships in a little bit and why yeah. this is so important, but one of the guys who was involved at the beginning with 352, Brian Keller, he was at Microsoft.
Okay.
Had some association with this, heard about this, and said, hey, I know this little agency in Gainesville, Florida. They're scrappy.
Yeah.
They're hungry.
Yeah.
And they do some interactive CD-ROM work. Maybe you should see if these guys can get it done.
Yeah.
And so we got the phone call, and the phone call was, I got the opportunity for you to get your foot in the door with Microsoft. And
my
instant reaction was,
yes, 100%, whatever you need.
It doesn't matter what you're about to say.
Yeah.
And then they're saying, okay, because what we're about to say is impossible.
Yeah.
And what we're about to say is you have to build this entire CD, DVD. And here's the real tricky part. Get 42,000 copies of the DVD printed.
Yeah, that's the part.
And to Orlando in like 2.5 weeks.
And we're 24 hours.
We're like, what?
Yeah, gosh.
So we literally had employees who were working overnight. We went to like a 24-hour shift. to work on the DVD.
That's what you have to do, though.
That's what you have to do. Yeah. I gather the staff and I'm like, this is our opportunity. This is our golden moment. This will allow us to win our first major client. And what a client this will be with Microsoft.
Yeah.
We have to do whatever it takes. And whatever it takes is going to mean incredible stress, incredible pressure, long hours, overnights.
Yes.
But let's rally together as a team and let's do it. And we, so team responded wonderfully well, but getting the DVDs produced, well, that was the chore, right? So we had a DVD production company in Texas that was like, okay, we can do it. They needed like 4 days or 5 days. That was like their super unbelievable rush to make 42,000 DVDs. And so we had so little time that like the DVD had to be to them on like a Wednesday for them to turn it around by the following like Monday for it to then be at the conference, which then started on like Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
So we had so little time that we could not, when we finally got all the material on the master DVD for them to then replicate.
Right.
It was like Tuesday night at like 9 p.m. or something like this. And they had to start printing this thing on Wednesday.
Yeah.
We didn't even have time for FedEx to ship it overnight.
You flew
it. We couldn't wait for overnight shipping. So we were figuring out, what do we need to do?
Yeah.
We're going to have to put someone on a plane and fly them to Dallas. Like, because what else? Well, what we discovered is that actually Delta offers a service called Delta Dash where they will literally transport your item on a plane for you.
Really?
As if it were a passenger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like an emergency delivery service. It's like a same day emergency delivery service by Delta. So we drove it to the airport.
Right.
Did the thing. They actually loaded it on the Delta flight and it went on the next Delta flight to Dallas. And then we had a courier waiting at the airport in Dallas. It got off the flight. They gave it to the courier. The courier drove it to the production facility. It got to the conference the day before. It needed to get to the conference. It got there actually even, I think, like 24 hours early. They got in all the DVDs. It was a huge success. And then Microsoft became our agency's number one client for like 6 years in a row.
Wow.
After that, 6 or 7 years in a row, like 2004 rather, through I think 2010 or so, Microsoft was our number one client. And then because we won Microsoft, all of a sudden, you have credibility.
You have it on your portfolio.
All of a sudden,
yeah.
Now all of a sudden, yeah. Oh, now we're legit. Now we can talk to Wells Fargo and now we can talk to Cox Automotive and these various companies who we then won. Nationwide Insurance became one of our biggest clients of all time. All these really big clients who we won over the years. Well, once you're in the club, once you're like, hey, look, we did this for Microsoft, we're in the club.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like once you, you know, like if you're able to date a pretty girl, then like all of a sudden, all of a sudden, all the other girls think,
wow.
They look at you.
Once you get an 8, you're solid.
That's it.
Oh my God.
Because then all the other girls are like, well, how did he get that girl? He must have something going on. It's the same damn thing in business.
Oh, wow.
Once you get one big client, tout that to the moon. Parade that client.
So many images. Put it on social.
Because then the other clients, they're gonna be like, oh, that agency's got something going on.
There is something to say about that though, because like I used to work at an event company, and once we got Red Bull, then it's, you know, we got MLS. We got, you know, there's so many other ones like Kaiser. I mean, it's just crazy. Once you do get that like big client, you're like good to go.
So you have to hustle like hell
and
do whatever it takes and take it for scraps. Take it for free. Goodness. Do whatever you can just to get the big name client on your resume in your portfolio, because it helps then get the next one. That's what you got to do if you're little, you know, especially in the agency world, right? Like different businesses are different, but in the agency world, that's real important. Like who you've worked with, you know, the projects that you can show in your portfolio, that kind of stuff's real important.
Now that's a lot of success though, but what were the lessons? Because I feel, again, there's going to be, through that amount of years, you're going to have so many successes, but you're also going to have a lot of like big lessons learned.
Oh yeah. Oh, trust me. It was not all roses for the agencies are really tough businesses. Mm-hmm. It is not, by the way, it is not a business I recommend growing. Like it is a tough business.
That's fascinating.
Agencies have, and we'll talk, we can talk more about that, but agencies have these tremendous ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. You see agencies all the time. We're hiring 30 new people because we won some massive contract. We're doing a layoff and we're letting 40 people go because we lost
a massive project.
Yeah, yeah. It happens all the time. These big clients will choose an agency and they're such a big client that that one client, you know, we never, like the Madison Avenue agencies that do like, you know, that are agency of record for like, you know, nationwide and that kind of stuff. They'll have 200, 300, 400 employees working on one account. Well, guess what happens if that account goes away?
Yeah.
A lot of those employees, sometimes all of those employees are let go.
Oh my goodness.
And then when they then win the next big account, they're suddenly scrambling to hire. But that's how the agencies do it. They don't sit around with a lot of extra payroll on their books. They right. can't because your margin's not good enough to sustain that. All of your people have to be working on client work. If you go through a lull period, mm-hmm. unfortunately, you got to figure out a way to cut back on headcount, which is one of the reasons why it kind of sucks as a business model on the larger scale. It's just all about, you know, profiting off of your headcount. And so then your headcount's got to go up and down. And, you know, you can only pay people so much because you're always trying to make a margin on mm-hmm. above whatever you're paying them to then charge back to the client. There's a lot of challenges with the agency business model. So as a result of that, it's a roller coaster ride. It's volatile, right? Yeah. And we had years where we did really, really well and we're profitable and we're hiring, and other years where we were really struggling and having to let people go and you know, losing money. And I mean, that happened repeatedly over the course of the 27-year history, the good years and the bad years. And that's part of agency life. It was compounded by the fact that, like, because I started this business with very little business experience, I mean, I was obviously super young.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's like, we're going this like lessons learned thing. Yeah. Like, you did not start this with the idea of it being this type of an agency. So you had no idea of like the ebbs and the flows and like any of that.
So it was a lot of learning on the job, right? It was a lot of like cutting my teeth and figuring this stuff out. So as a result of that, we made a lot more mistakes.
Yeah.
Than like if I were to restart the agency today from scratch, I mean, I would be able to be a lot more successful earlier because I've had the experiences. But back then I didn't have the experience, and so I was figuring out as I was going. And that's fine. And by the way, from that perspective, an agency actually is a great business model to get started with because it requires very little capital investment. Starting an agency for most people is just simply, hey, I know how to do something so I can do it for you and charge you money. That's how I started.
Right.
I mean, there was basically, I didn't put hardly any money into it. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, I can do this. And then I start getting more work than I can handle. Oh no, I can afford to hire somebody. Oh, right. I can afford to hire. So it's efficient and easy to get started. It's really difficult and painful to scale and do it at a big level. So, you know, the getting started bit took a lot longer because of inexperience, which is fine. You know, it was a good environment to learn those lessons and do all those things. But yeah, I mean, it lots of lessons along the way. A few things though that stick out to me for sure. The importance of relationships. This is true in any business. The importance of relationships with clients and customers, so critical, especially in the agency business. Mm-hmm. It's all about relationships. Like it's all about building those relationships and having a true partnership with your clients where they're looking at you as like a trusted partner in their business and not just a vendor. That's so critical.
Yeah.
And for you to have the depth of communication with them, like the relationship where you're like, they're really trusting you and they're really relying on you and you can have honest conversation with them and like really, really good communication. That's where you want to get. Mm-hmm. In a client relationship. Right. I mean, it's true with most businesses, right? Especially true with agencies. And then also the relationships with the employees. Like one thing that I'm most proud of at 352 is that we had unbelievable employee retention and tenure, especially with our group of employees. We had this group of employees who kind of built the agency with me along the way.
Right.
Like we had, you know, when we finally, you know, sold, we had 5 employees who had been with the agency for over 20 years.
What?
5.
That's crazy.
That had been there for over 20 years. So, I mean, we're going back to 2004 and prior.
Yeah.
So these employees started when this was tiny and mm-hmm. I was like early 20s, didn't know what the hell I was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was, and they stuck with it the whole time. And then we had like close to half of the staff had been there for at least 10 years.
Wow.
Incredible. It was incredible retention.
Yeah.
You know? And so that the relationships with the employees is obviously, you know, especially in the agency business, because it's all about your people. It's nothing but your people. Mm-hmm. All you're really selling are your people.
Right.
Like, you don't have a product that you're selling. Mm-hmm. It's just your people. And mm-hmm. so having really good people and then having the relationship with those people where they trust you and you trust them and you guys have been through battles and wars together and you know they're going to come through for you and they mm-hmm. know you're going to, you have their back, and like those dynamics are so critical, especially in a business like an agency, to be successful. And so, yeah, wild ride.
Well, why did you decide to sell then? And then like, why, I guess, how did you go about doing it? Because I mean, when you talk about, I mean, clearly, if you're watching this, you can see the reverence that he has for 352. If you're listening, you understand like how much this company has meant to you over the years. Like, why did you sell?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a great question. 352 was riding high in like 2017, 2018, 2019.
Right.
We really had a lot of momentum. We were hiring, we were winning big accounts, our revenue was up, we were very, very profitable. We were here in Atlanta, headquartered in Atlanta. We still had two offices in Florida, Gainesville and Tampa. Our business development was all here in Atlanta. And what we found that was really working well for us was we based all of our business development around doing in-person events in Atlanta. Mm. So we had, we built a local network of innovators from large companies. So we would get from like all the different Fortune 500 companies in Atlanta, of which there are a ton of them.
Yeah.
We would have, you know, people from like Home Depot and Chick-fil-A and Delta.
A lot of headquarters here.
Yeah, oh, tons of different headquarters, you know, Cox Communications and all kinds of companies. We'd have folks from their innovation departments, from their, you know, user experience, digital product development, people who were kind of on the front end of innovation, who were coming up with new ideas, new products, new digital initiatives for these companies. And we would gather them. We would have a monthly gathering. We called it at first it was called the Enterprise Entrepreneurship Series. And it was like kind of the idea of like people that are starting things within companies.
Mm-hmm.
Let's gather them together. And we would then solicit speakers from these companies, people who had done an interesting project at UPS or an interesting project at Turner,
right,
where they had started something new and it was successful and growing and turned into like a business unit. So those people would come speak and tell the story, and then you have other like-minded people who were kind of trying to make those waves within their own organization. And we'd have these events every month, and we'd typically get 40 to 80 people.
Yeah, that's
a
good turnout.
Yeah, we eventually were doing these in our own office. They were a wonderful source of business development for mm-hmm. us. And then we started doing multiple events per month. We were doing workshops, all these things, everything revolving around our office.
Mm-hmm.
We were winning all kinds of work from these things, consulting engagements, new product development, product design, prototyping. You know, we were building apps and software and all this stuff.
It's that in-person network, though.
It was wonderful.
You can't beat that type of.
It was like, wonderful.
Yeah.
Really, really working well. We were leaning into it heavily, had all kinds of momentum, and then COVID.
The one thing that we all know that hit, yeah.
COVID.
Yeah.
COVID absolutely killed our entire sales and new business development strategy, and we started reeling, and it was rough. 2020 and 2021 were okay from like, we still had okay revenue
mm-hmm.
because we were working on projects that had sold in 2019.
Because you had the contract in place.
Our sales pipeline slowed down.
Yeah.
And we started to then see revenue dip, and we started to see, you know, cracks in our armor, and it was, and you could just see the writing on the wall. It was like quarter after quarter, we were declining.
Oh, no.
And it was like, crap. And we tried to take our events virtual. Mm-hmm. We were like, you know what, we're going to do webinar series and we'll do all these things virtually. It didn't work. Like, it didn't work from a business development standpoint. There's magic to getting people together in a room. And
yeah,
then
you just can't beat that in-person experience.
A Zoom call, like, people were logging in, paying half attention. There was no ability to like network with them. And what made our in-person things work was they, you know, all these important people would come to listen to these speakers, and then one of our people would sit right next to them
mm-hmm.
and strike up a conversation and tell them a little bit about what we do and what projects we're working on.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they would be like, oh, you know what? You could be really helpful to this project I'm working on, or you could be really helpful to this thing this other department's doing.
Right.
Maybe you should come in and meet these people. That's how it all happened.
Yeah.
Couldn't do that virtually.
No.
And so we tried, we all of a sudden, you know, our sales and business development team turned over because they were all, we built them all up for events,
mm-hmm.
and it became apparent as 2020 went on that events were coming back anytime soon.
Yeah.
At first we thought they were, right?
Yeah.
Like at first when COVID first hit.
Well, I mean, when this all hit, everybody was like, oh, it'll be a month.
Correct.
Or, oh, it'll be 3 months. And then, yeah.
So I wasn't worried at first. I'm like, oh, this will be a few months. We'll be back to our event series this summer. No big deal. But then like by August, it was clear like, oh, we're a year, maybe two away from events ever even restarting. And so
such
at that point,
our
head of sales left. And then it just kind of fell apart. Our other salespeople left. So anyway, we were facing that. We tried a lot of changes to how we approach business. So unfortunately, we were in somewhat of a state of decline anyway. So
mm-hmm.
I wish it didn't play out that way, but it did. So there was pressure there, right? There was pressure of like, man, and we weren't by no means dead. Like we still had good clients and some good projects happening,
right,
and repeat work for older clients, but we weren't winning new work at the pace we needed to. And so there was just kind of mounting pressure of like, going the wrong direction.
Right.
And that continued,
yeah,
through 2020, 2021, 22, especially 23. And then on top of that, I had the complete opposite story,
yeah,
happening with Sports Card Investor.
Yeah.
And I'm over here, obviously, and this thing is taking off like an absolute rocket ship.
Yeah.
And not only was it crazy how much it was growing, and
mm-hmm.
the audience and our employee count and the people subscribing to Market Movers and our,
yeah,
revenue and all of this.
The first 3 months was insane.
Insane. It was taking off like a rocket ship, and it needed more and more of my time because,
mm-hmm.
like, we were hiring, we were doing more content, we were outputting more. And I saw the opportunity was here. This,
yeah,
was the opportunity. And so I was really struggling, you know, trying to like help 352 that was struggling and spend as much,
yeah,
time as I needed to with Sports Card Investor that was rocketing up.
Right.
Such a dichotomy between the two companies at that point in time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we tried different things. We had different people at 352 step into different leadership roles and everything like that. But it was challenging. And so we got to the middle of 2023, and I was starting to think to myself, I'm like, man, I am concerned about 352's future.
Mm-hmm.
In order to really build it back up, I probably need to give it more time.
Yeah.
At the same time, we're talking about opening up a card shop.
Yeah.
We're talking about opening up Cards HQ.
That was like in the middle of design planning.
Yeah. Yeah. We were moving forward with opening up a card shop,
yeah,
right? And I'm just looking at this going, I don't know that the best path forward is for me to continue to try to
make
352,
yeah,
happen.
Yeah.
Because it was very, very, the thing that was the most important to me,
mm-hmm.
was making sure that my people, the people that had been with the company,
mm-hmm.
for a long time, the people that had been with the company for 5, 10, 20 years.
Yeah, that went on that ride with you.
Those people.
Yeah.
I needed to make sure that those people were taken care of.
Right.
And that they had good careers out in front of them with growth potential, ability to, you know, continue to progress, become,
mm-hmm.
more senior, make more money. And I was getting concerned that, you know, we 352's team size had whittled down some, but all of our 10-year people, all of our 20-year people were still there. But I was like, man, I don't want to run into a scenario where those people, like their futures become in doubt. I did not want that to happen. So in the summer of 2023, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start looking around just,
yeah,
to see.
How do you do that, by,
yeah,
the way?
Yeah. So what I did was a couple things. So I went to, there are business brokers who you can go to.
Yeah.
I went to an agency business broker, and they had a list of a lot of different agencies that commonly do acquisitions and that kind of thing. So
okay.
they put word out. And
so it's kind of like a real estate person, mm-hmm. but for businesses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of that. So you can list your business for sale and everything. So I went to this agency business broker and they kind of shopped it around. We had a handful of different agencies that came back and were really interested in doing something with us. And then I also went to a couple of our clients,
okay.
who I thought maybe they would have interest in acquiring our team and bringing them internal.
Okay.
Because, you know, if a client, I mean, think about it as an agency, if you've got a client that is doing a lot of work with you or spending a lot of money with you.
Right.
And if they're hiring and growing.
It makes more sense just to.
It may make sense economically for them to say, well, maybe we
swallow. We're giving the money anyway.
Maybe we swallow you up,
yeah.
you know, and do some type of acquisition. You know, maybe they pay you out over time or whatever, but they right. kind of swallow you into their company. And so. Spent a lot of time, you know, got a lot of interest, and then spent the latter part of 2023 and, you know, the first part of 2024 really evaluating all of these options in a lot of detail.
Yeah.
And whittled down, we actually ended up doing kind of almost in some ways kind of a double acquisition where the majority of our team went to one of our clients. Our
okay.
client gobbled up a lot of our team. And then a small part of the team plus all of our clients went to a big agency.
Ah.
So it's kind of a double move.
Okay.
So that's how it kind of ended up. And it ended up as a really good situation for everybody. The employees went to a company that is paying them really well. Everyone got a raise on day one. They better benefits. More career upwards trajectory, more people moved into management roles from day one. So there was a win there for mm-hmm. the employees. And then the clients went to a bigger agency, more services to offer, more potential.
More coverage, yeah.
More coverage. So the way that it worked out, I thought was positive for
yeah.
everybody involved.
Yeah.
You know, the money that I eventually got for it wasn't as good as what it would have been back in 2019 mm-hmm. when the agency itself was yeah. rocketing up. But you know what?
There's no way you could have known though.
It was you can never time anything perfectly. It was a good outcome for everybody.
Yeah.
I was still happy with it at the end of the day. You know, I got a payout and was happy with where things ended. But most importantly, was happy for our people
mm-hmm.
and what they got to go on to do.
Yeah.
And then it allowed me to obviously kind of reconcentrate
mm-hmm.
here a yep. little bit more, right?
Yep.
As opposed to having my time quite as split as it has been.
So looking back on it, what would have been, then what was like the best thing then about 352? Like as a wrap of a 352, what was the best?
I mean, I will always remember 352 for its culture.
Uh-huh.
We had a really, really strong culture at 352. Mm-hmm. And something, by the way, we still need to work on and build here at Sports
yeah.
Car Investor.
Yeah.
It's 352 had something really, really special in terms of culture. And part of it was obviously having people together for so long, but the fact that people were together for so long was in part due to the culture. And it was a culture of a lot of respect. It was a culture of people really caring for each other,
mm-hmm.
Caring about each other as humans, a lot of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a group that many ways grew up together. Just really invested in each other, a good group of people that had good hearts, really cared about each other, and it made for just a really, really good work environment. And I'm thrilled that they most of them are continuing on working together
yeah.
now under a different company.
Yeah,
but they're continuing on working.
Oh, I didn't
together.
Think about it that way.
Yeah,
I guess then the culture goes with them.
I said that to them. I'm like, look, I'm like, you guys are going to take this culture with you.
Yeah.
Like this culture, the reason everyone's a little sad, obviously, that 352 is ending. But I said, no. I said, what made 352 so special
was
the
guys.
Culture.
Yeah.
It was the connection
yeah.
that you all had. You are staying together.
Yeah.
Carry that connection forward
mm-hmm.
into the company that you're going to. And they are. And hopefully they are all able to stay together long into the future. Nothing would make me, you know, happier.
Yeah.
And so I look at that. And then, you know, the other thing for 352 for me was over the years I started or was involved in the founding of
mm-hmm.
a number of different companies. And some of those companies went on to become unbelievably successful.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them still operating today. And for a lot of these different companies that I started, we set up different companies, you know, different corporations for each of them. I had different partners in these companies for, in a lot of cases, but oftentimes that company, I would have hire 352 to do some work in the early stages to help get the company off the ground.
Right.
So while 352 was never officially part of companies, these companies that I started, like ILS Network and Novi AMS and my wife's company, Social News Desk, and, you know, and even Sports Card Investor, Market Movers, it was never officially part of those companies. But all of those companies, plus even others like RoadSync and Neighborly Solver, these are all companies that I invested in that in all cases have gone on to become worth tens of millions of dollars. And they all, in the early stages, hired 352. And 352 did some form of kind of initial work to get them, whether it was branding, whether it was building their first website, whatever it was. But my team at 352, just like they perform the services for anybody else, but it was special knowing that my group at 352 performed services for these companies that have then gone on and done all these really great, amazing, big things. And which, and I'm still part of the ride with all of those companies, but I can thank my 352 team for being part of the initial catalyst for helping, you know, these companies get going. And so it's that's a cool kind of legacy lives on of 352 in that manner as well.
So, you know, just with all this free time you have now, you're not going to start another agency, are you?
No.
we're done with the agency game.
Done with the agency game. Yeah. I would not start another agency. As I said, I think it's a great business when you're young.
Yeah.
It's a great way to get started if you're a first time entrepreneur.
Young, spunky.
As a young, hungry, first time entrepreneur, an agency is not a bad business to start because you can start it with very little capital. And but in terms of like scaling it and all, oh man, it's rough. So yeah, no, I would not start another agency. Now we have though recently taken some of the kind of principles a little bit of an agency and brought them into Sports Card Investor, right? Yeah. This is kind of a little bit of a metamorphosis we're undergoing internally here with Cards HQ now online. And we're trying to figure out the best way to leverage our own talent and our own resources within Sports Card Investor to help our empire of sports card related businesses grow. Market Movers, you know, the Sports Card Investor app and stand-up displays and, you know, that and different companies we're involved in promoting, like BCW and whatnot, and, you know, all these various, how do we best leverage our resources and talent at Sports Card Investor to help all of them grow? And so we're taking a little bit of an agency approach.
Yeah. I mean, that was a thing that we sort of started discussing earlier this year. We were just like looking at the breadth of like all of the, what we do. There's a lot of deliverables on the day to day that are just so creative based that are being requested almost, you know, multiple times a day, that it sort of just made sense for us to sort of restructure in a way that allowed, you know, our creative team to become more of an asset to these, you know, brands, to these products that we service. So, yeah, in some ways, we're taking like a lot of the knowledge that you learn from 352 and applying that to our own like internal structure here so that we can, you know, service at a quicker and more complete scale to all of the items we need, you know, all of the sellers, the live sellers at Cards HQ for whatnot. You know, it's kind of crazy when you think about the amount of materials needed for just one show, right? You're looking at marketing, you're looking at graphics, you're looking at production value. There's a lot that goes on. So it just sort of made sense for us to sort of restructure here in that sense for like that internal agency within the company.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Cards HQ alone has almost several different businesses within one business, right? Mm-hmm. We've got the live selling and the breaking operation, you know, which right now is on Whatnot. We've got the actual retail store. We're wanting to build up events. That's a big part of the plan. TCG tournaments and trade nights and all that kind of stuff, right? We've got our website, which is now live, cardshq.com, where we're shipping cards and a lot of our inventory is on our website. So that's an online digital web business. So these are all almost in many ways different businesses, yet they're all within Cards HQ. And so, you know, as we have kind of looked at the first 4 months now of Cards HQ, what could we do better? How could we improve?
Right.
One thing that stood out to us is like, we need to give more marketing, promotion, refine the operations, better production into each of these elements of the Cards HQ business. Well, how best can we do that? Well, we've got an amazing team at Sports Card Investor that does all that stuff really well. So how can it best serve all these different business units at Cards HQ in addition to Market Movers, which, by the way, has been growing like
crazy
this year. Unbelievable growth this year.
This is so, because it's like full circle, right? So when I started, it was the crazy amounts of growth with Market Movers. And like with any business, you have crazy amounts of growth and you've got ebbs and flows with like actual membership counts. But like, I feel like we're coming back to like where we first started now. And like when we're thinking of like restructuring in the sense, it's to best serve us, you know, if we would have looked back when we first started, maybe this sort of structure would have made sense at that time. But now that we're here again to this point where we're having explosive growth on Market Movers, we're having, you know, great growth with Cards HQ within the multifaceted points of Cards HQ, having something like this, it just makes sense. You know, it makes sense to have all of those points covered now. Because there's a lot. Like when people think about SCI, you know, you clearly have the channel and you have you and you have, you know, the branding that we've put out to the hobby on this. But there's so much more that we do within the internal business structure. I mean, we do marketing, we do email marketing, we do web marketing, we do social, we do the amount of graphics. Amount of graphics. You know, we've got our video production team that has a handle on absolutely everything. And then this is just sort of expounding.
I mean, we're basically a full scale agency.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
a full scale agency is essentially what Sports Card Investor is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's to put out all that content, all that media, all that promotion. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the shift, is we're going to run it a little bit more like an agency since it is a full scale agency. And I think that's going to best allow us to serve the needs of all of the different brands that we now have underneath our umbrella, and you know, continue to help grow them all as we've been able to do so far, and now hopefully we can do it with even greater speed.
Yeah. Now, I guess the real honest question here is, what are you going to do with all your free time?
I wish I had all that free time, Kelly.
No.
I was working at like 220% capacity. And now that 352 sold, I'm working at like 180% capacity.
Okay.
So, you know, free time is not a word that I'm very familiar with.
I'm aware of that. Yeah. Do you know how many times I've been like, Jeff, just go on vacation?
Yeah.
You don't have to respond to Slack.
I know. I do. And you know what? I do travel a lot with my family. Like, we do a lot of vacations, but I do also
work during all of them as well.
That's what, I mean, you know, that's a little bit the trade-off, right? Like, that's a little bit what empowers the fact that, you know, yeah, we can go, we can travel, but I got to work a little bit during it, because if I totally cut myself off, then I wouldn't be able to, but you know, go nearly as much. But then there's another factor to it as well. And that's like, I love what I do.
Yeah.
So I actually don't like, you know, I don't actually want to be completely disconnected ever, because this is fun. Like, I want to see what's happening the week I'm gone at Cards HQ. Like, how are sales? How's traffic?
Right.
What's going on with our videos that we're putting out that week? How are our social posts performing? Like, I may not be in them, but I still want to see them.
Yes.
And see how they, so I like, it's, there's also a love for it thing as well. So it's a little bit like, I don't ever want to totally disconnect, you know?
Yeah.
But I would like, you know, but bringing the, you know, getting a little bit off my plate is probably a good idea.
So here's a question I have. So when you were at 352, a hobby that you started was collecting sports cards, and then sort of came into this, you know, this wonderful, you know, job that we all have here and this business that we run. Are you going to pick up a new hobby now that this is now your job?
No.
No crocheting.
I think I'm done.
Okay. You're done with the hobbies.
Somehow I managed to turn my hobby into a big business.
Yes.
So God forbid I get into crocheting.
And then crochet investor.
Then 3 years from now, like we're doing a whole video series about crocheting on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like I'm having to make appearances at crocheting conventions.
If you turn that into knitting, then we can just sell your knit sweatshirts on Cards HQ. It could be the Sports Card Investor knits.
That sounds like the collab
that
nobody needs. That's the collab that nobody needs. Appreciate the idea, though.
Yeah, you're welcome. Just some fun ideas for passing of times.
There you go. There you go. Well, thank you, Kelly, for joining me for this little trip down memory lane. Hopefully the audience found a little value in it today. And if not, then I appreciate the audience just letting me riff and story
tell. Some value and some laughs along the way.
There you go, for sure. And I want to remind everybody out there that the full-length version of these shows are on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, so you can listen to them on the go. Make sure you are subscribed there, as well as to the Jeff Wilson Show channel on YouTube. And we appreciate you guys, and we'll be back next week with our next episode. Take care.